philosophy 58, May 12, 1949.
And you computed up what you have inherited as a natural fact. Put it under in zero, in the year zero of our era. So every human being lives in a monistic universe. The tribe in his tribe, the imperialist in his empire, the Jew in Israel. By the year 1000, everybody lives in church and state. There is in the year 1000 two souls kept into the heart of men. Jesus said, I have come to bring a sword. That's literally true. He has cut the unified monotony and monochrome or monolith of political environment. Once a Christian, always a Christian. Once a Roman, always a Roman. Once a Jew, always a Jew. In the year, said more carefully, 1054, or 1075, what do you see? Years are rather arbitrary. Every human being finds itself in at least two orders, church and state. Of the first 1000 years of our era is the dualism that a man is not either an imperial in an empire or in a tribe or in Israel, but that he is in Zion and in Rome, in Iceland and in the church. In 999, the last Germanic group, the Icelandic, this meant that they from now on belong to the Icelandic political union and to the Christian Church. Now you have completely forgotten that there was a time only 900 years ago where this was not so, where people could just belong to one order of things. You see, all this is lost on you. You are again in this monolith of Mr. Truman's empire. He's a hoover, of course, and then you know in what monoliths you are. It is terrifying. Egypt is upon us. If you don't do something about it, gentlemen, you will have burned the Christian era. That's just the meaning of Israel from the communist revolution. That the achievement of the last 2,000 years can be cancelled out. If the idea of most people who live today in this country, one city, one civilization, one world government, that's why these people terrify them so much, these called Mayas and these strikes and all these unvisual robbers. They are tyrants in their mind. They wish to abolish what has been bought by the blood of Christ and the martyrs. Christ died so that called Maya may not have his sin. He died so that there might be no world government. Have you never understood that Christ came into the world to prevent Caesar from being the only governor of the world? What's world government others but in Caesarism? It's fantastic, the naivety of the modern world. Everything is forgotten, everything is done. But you can't do everything, of course. There is every man can destroy the element of the church. Every man can destroy the achievements of the last 2,000 years. During the last 3,000 years, the fate of mankind has been put to an extent and time before into the hands of frail mortals. You all can destroy it. The man who destroys this era is called the Antichrist. And everybody has the power to become the Antichrist. Antichrist means substitute for Christ. That is, the man who knows the road to salvation himself. Antichrist is not against Christ. Don't think it's for minute. Anti means in Greek instead. And many people are antichrist and anti-Christians who don't keep bothered even to mention Christ. I mean, they're superior to it. Why should they mention this Jewish carpenter in Palestine?
He said, Father, no, Mr. Hitler has no, just no use for it.
They are not anti class, they are instead class. That is to say, gentlemen, any man in the Christian era cannot foresee I begin from scratch. The Christian era is the common enterprise of mankind. Christ is the first to begin. He's the beginning, the Alpha, and he's all right, in his own right, the pinnacle achievement of the Christian era. That is, if all men were like him, he would have one mankind. His attempt was to create one humanity, one human race. The famous brotherhood of man, which today is used as an empty phrase, was to him the achievement of his life. If you wish to have the brotherhood of man, all he could do was only to be the first brother of all men. This is more than he could do. This he is. Christ is the first brother in this brotherhood of men. Which perhaps you will admit. That's not difficult for you to admit, I think. Otherwise, the brotherhood of man would be an empty phrase. Now, every antichrist denies that the brotherhood of man has already started. The antichrist is the man who says, let's get together. And you are, yesterday I heard this historic Voltairean song. Let's get together and do everything together. Do you know this song? It's a lie. Because no human being wants to do everything together. Jesus never said such nonsense. But the Voltairean thinks that they really realize the brotherhood of man. Because it's pious life. All these free enterprise men, this competition, filling their whole brain, is how to knock out the brother next door. They say, let's all endow everything together. And they tolerate this. The Christian says, I'm a secret. And I wish I could be real and real. Transport millions of people as though they were false flesh
from one country to another.
And then you is the achievement of the
millennium of world
tree in natural science. Now if you want to have one world, you can't have one family. Because a family, obviously, is a group in which everybody has spoken for it. In which the father is very glad that the son should get his own economy and should marry somebody and have a house of his own. And he knew in which he will not interfere with his son's destiny. But if you look at modern world trade and modern tendencies of the Marshall Plan and of Soviet communism and of modern when came in the State Department, I told you this, we have no passports. And I told you that they are the Ozarks are not very welcome in California. Does this look as though many dangerous things come to this? You have to choose. As soon as you make the world one, then make is no one.
But then in getting a brotherhood of men, don't you have to then tear down any barriers that you have to these worldly barriers to the stopping of brotherhood of men? In other words, you've got states that are stopping the brotherhood of man, and to get the brotherhood, to give man this freedom, because man is more important, you have to tear down the boundaries.
Well, I live in a house, my neighbor lives in a house, I beg for you that he can be bothered because he has a family. Does not include that word. We were speaking, he has something and I have something. If we had all everything in common, we'd be pigs but not brothers. It is nonsense to think that the community of things makes for brotherhood. It makes gentlemen for quarrel. Good heads make good neighbors.
I don't mean fences, tear down fences so that you have everybody enjoying everything together. I'm talking about tear down barriers that are stopping.
But we are doing the opposite at this moment. We are building up fences, aren't we?
I agree with you. But I say you've got to tear down the fences so that you can have a brotherhood of men. Not equalizing everybody else out. So
you do not begin with tearing out the streets. You see, the brotherhood must be so strong that the fences don't matter. Now, the question is a method. If you focus, everybody has fixations. If you focus your attention on boundaries, as they do today in politics, they, against the will of all these statesmen, will go to a tremendous height. If you speak to people and of people and with people, these boundaries remain, but they become elusive and indifferent. You will always find, gentlemen, that if you wish to achieve something in life, perhaps you take this down, to achieve anything in life, you must never imagine. It must always be the byproduct of your higher self. I had a friend who was an engineer, a great genius. He wrote a book in which he told that nothing finite had ever been achieved. It's the people who wanted it and seemed as infinite. The American mayor and female, by the way, who are so terribly unhappy because they have been told that it's a fortuna. You have to pursue for salvation, then you can be happy. That is salvation lies beyond that which can be fulfilled. Then heaven is given as a bargain. Never, gentlemen, aim at that which you want. Always aim at that to which you are destined. You never know if you achieve it, because only at the obituary will you know if you have achieved your destiny. That nobody knows in fact. But if you follow the star, on this earth, these things will all be given to you. It's a very strange story that has come through my life day after day. I have stood with them. I have aimed at one thing with great fervor, the right thing.
the one moment in my life which I became happy. When I gave up my great ambition to be a very small boy. And people, I have the tendency of all did something else. And now in the course I've also become a quite considerable scholar. So it doesn't matter. But if you ask for something too seriously, it's your pet, it's your eye, it's your pet. Nothing man can miss in that way. That makes you also an empty. That's why the secular energy is so crisp, has to do with psychoanalysis.
If you had any education, sir, this would have been taught at when we were six. You are all such. I mean, everything has disappeared from your soul. This is the foundation that the men, the truth of our era. That the men who wants to have his soul will lose it. And the men who are ready to lose his soul will gain it. Have you never heard of this famous sentence? Well, if not one of you believes it, you're shaped.
It's simply true. Anybody who aims at something as his aim in life, as his purpose, is mistaken. Because fortunately, you are somebody else's purpose. You aren't your own. Your purpose are ridiculous. You can say, I want to have a car, I want to have a house. But gentlemen, you are somebody alive whose little purpose is who here clicks somewhere in your telephone. Out of what you are, a great German poet who died 2 years ago, has said, I am purpose, and I am will, and I am thought, and therefore I can will, and I can also have purposes, and I can think. This is condition. You cannot think. I don't think anyone in this class who can think, except by the mercy of the tradition of the spirit that hits you in part somehow. But you cannot think so. I cannot think. When I think my best, I'm out of the system.
What passes through me into you, and if you are at your best, you forget your best. You see, this is true all the way to get stranger. You can talk to a divorced woman about marriage, and she can admit that marriage is a sacred and a divorce can be. Then she has understood, because she has thought something which doesn't come out of her, but it's still against her own interest. That's the difference. And the same with you. If you can admit that something is true, it is against everything you are interested in. Then the truth exists. Then you begin to think. Therefore, we are thought, and we are purpose, and we are in it, and we are with it. And in reflection, we can aim smaller than houses and cars and countries and continents and living of world history and so on. You can reach it with your presence of the United States. But the story of any presence of the United States only begins. On the other side of his office, he was the man. What was the office of him? Did the office go? It is so difficult now, it's a shame, gentlemen, to live today. Because that which has made our hero, this one sentence, he who seeks his soul will lose it, he who loses his soul will gain it. That's the basis of everything. That's just a transcription of the sentence. Anybody, you see,
spent the 5,000. He abolished the rule that two and two is four. Then he created the rule that things can move mountains. And all this is to be the material truth in the history of the church proves. Now, to give you an example, I think, the Christian era is built on the four cornerstones. The church must keep the first brother alive, or the brother of men will never be created. Or in other words, gentlemen, the Christian era knows that you are a temporal being, and therefore the idiocy of today, that the 2,000 million living people should form a brotherhood, is horrible and nonsense. The whole problem of mankind is to form a brotherhood between the men from the first stage to the last. And this could only be conceived by Christ at the end of antiquity, when the whole world was inhabited. And you could now begin to say to every habitation in the world, let the people out of this habitation come and join one common enterprise. In other words, gentlemen, you are all but caught first with miscalled mire by thinking of the church of God in terms of space. That Christ thought of it as a continuation through time. And therefore he created not a house or St. Peter in Rome or the Vatican, but he created an era. An era. And he praised the church, therefore, of the eon of eons. Or the world without end, which is a very long translation of the English, which has made the Anglo-Saxons nearly impenetrable to Christian truth. You know, in the church services, they have translated, and in secula seculorum, the verse of the glory to the Father and to the Son and to the Holy Ghost. They have translated in the Anglican and the Congregational hymn books with world without end. Now, it really means, gentlemen, cycle of time after cycle of time. The final cycle has superseded, and it has superseded the imperial cycle. You remember the great year of the Egyptians, of 496 years? But this has been based on the assumption that all these cycles exist, and that all these cycles have to be survived. In secular secularum means, therefore, not the static world without end. You just have there a nice world and you move it up and down the alley all the time. Well, that's how it sounds, world without end. The perfectly riskless enterprise. The real story is, as Mr. Hitler has put it, I wish, he said, to end one solar constellation. I was upset. I was impressed by the man's insight into his own territory. He wanted to end a solar constellation, which would by and large equal the great year of the Egyptians, you see. Christ came to take men into a peace from which he would be able to bury his own cycles. Men who is able to die to his own cycles is a Christian. Gentlemen, you must incorporate into your vocabulary the perfect anagram phrase of dying to something. It's a hard word for you. That if you can't die to something, your death is in vain. Better die to something in time than to die in the flesh. You have to die to your own cycle. Capitalism has, Americans have to die to their own American cycle. It's a wish to live on forever. The cycle must not matter. That's why this whole talk of the death of civilization is very dangerous. If it isn't anchored in the Christian era, if the era isn't has given men the power to survive one generation and one civilization and one
misattained more than the other, you see, than which era has ever happened. The era is that institution, out of which the Roman Empire and the British Empire and the Turkish Empire and the Chinese Empire and the Japanese Empire can be dismissed. And you think he started and then still recognize himself as being the same man.
Did you use this disorder? It's not an important gentleman. I told you the story of Scipio, however. Did you did not? But to him it was important, this problem.
Of how a man can call home and survive himself. I knew a Chinese.
He's now in Washington. He was a friend of mine. I've seen him for so many years. He came to this country after the Chinese Empire had toppled. And he gave me a Christmas poem. And it read, always as a return, as a poor bird, there is not even a chance for tears. There is not even a chance for tears. The China of the 4,000 years is gone. He was a Christian. And that gave him the power to compose a poem which was impossible for him in our Chinese, without Christianity. 4,000 years, you see, they have established it big enough so that they saw nothing would happen. Inside 4,000 years, the individual feels pretty safe. And so every empire has made a big splash, we talked about this, to put everybody small into some big time. And if you have a big time, you see around you, you feel secure. There's meaning and security. Now the Chinese empire, it never lasted 4,000 years, at best 2,900, I would say, so it should be. The figures are wrong. But that doesn't matter. When he became a Christian, it meant for him that he could get out of the 4,000 year cycle, you see, and still recognize himself as a human soul. That's what the Christian era has enabled you and me. You can, I have survived at the end of Germany. That's something. You don't know what that is. You could not survive the end of the United States. You are better than prepared for this. But you should. You should be able to survive. You should be able to have some home, some spiritual home, in which, upon which you could look on the fall of your own civilization with complete serenity.
I have, and this Chinese friend has, and Scipio has, and at the moment of victory he has. But have you ever even known that this is your purpose in life? Your destiny? Now, if you haven't, gentlemen, you don't know what the separation of church and state means. It means just this, that a man, because he belongs to a church, can survive the end of his state, of all his states. State of a family father, state of a chef, state of a hazy man, state of a rich man, state of his affair. He stood in the most complete sense. A man who belongs to the church can survive any state of affairs. Can you guess it? That's why the word state was introduced when the church came. The word state, gentlemen, is not older than the 15th century. Before, there were only empires and kingdoms, that is, tribes and empires, as we call them here. The word state came only into being after the church was so firmly established that the members of any empire or tribe realized that they had a dual loyalty, a dual double allegiance. Every man in the Christian era has a double allegiance. He has to give God what is God's and to Caesar what is Caesar's. Caesar is temporal, time, past. God is forever. You think, of course, you're forever. You think that your divine soul is just a part or a moving of your power movements. That's what the psychologist told you about it. And that the United States are forever. Now it isn't so. Your soul is eternal and the United States are fair. But you can't imagine. You think capitalism is eternal or communism is eternal or
what, I don't know, what technology has done, what science has done. All these things we go. Aren't you a human being with a car or without a car? Do you really think that the port industry will go on and you will die? Johnson. Lincoln will live and Mr. Ford will be forgotten. I hope so. As far as I am concerned, I do everything to bring about this result. I mean, you can immortalize Mr. Ford, you can be buried with him under the entire state building. But I prefer to have the cars in the state of in the streets of New York, I walk around New York, and to have the memory of Lincoln celebrated. That's much more important to me.
How can
you buy diamonds?
That price is endless. Anyway, the question here is built on death. And since you are completely immune to the understanding of death, I have to give you today, that the whole purpose of this meeting today, four examples for which you are not prepared of how dying in life looks. I wish to show you the history of Christianity not in the person of the founder and not through the person of the four apostles, of the third apostles, and not through the person of the four apostles. I could do this, gentlemen. Christianity is always based on a fourfold death. And I'm going to show you this by the first four Christians who became so soon old. The deaths which they had to live had to happen inside their lives. There was no crucifix, there was no torment, there was no martyrdom. But there was death in life. Christianity said that death bears fruit. And that life is terror if it doesn't spring out of death. Christianity further puts death before life and says the human being is somebody for whom somebody has died. And the animal is somebody for whom nobody has died. You are different because somebody has died for you. The human nature, gentlemen, is a nature coined by another person's death. That's why you are no natural being. Four deaths are necessary. Man has to die through his own body, his face, his thing, his face. Man has to die to the political environment, to the boundaries of his political region. Man has to die to the spirit of his own day. Of his own time, that the time of the temporal day. And man has to die to the end of his own aims, to his own purposes. That's more than most people. Man has to die, he said it before, I must inform you. He must die to the spirit of his own day, here today. What people think today is important. He has to die to that. He doesn't become any important. And he has to die to his own purpose. When I wanted to be a great scholar, you see, I had just to set my library and all my books, like any rich young man in the New Testament. When the young man said, then how do I go enter the kingdom of heaven? Jesus then said, what you have? If you have too much mind and you are too clever, say you're clever. That's of course not just $1 million. And if you say, sell your books, sell your business. Now then, four deaths. You get it to your body, which is your own space. To the political boundaries, to the boundaries of the body politic, which is your common space. To the spirit of your own time, which is your common time. And
to your own ends, which is your own mind, and your personal mind. You have to die to all four. Four men of the fourth gentleman when Christianity was the clear or respectable. In the year in which Constantine became a Christian and tolerated Christianity, 313, Christianity was no longer on probation by God. The martyr, the last martyrs had died under Diocletian at the end of the third century, or in the beginning of the 305, or the West persecution. And after this tremendous last bloodletting, because Christians could say, well, here we are, the third of the earth. We come out of our cellars and basements and underground movement. For 300 years, everybody who said he was a Christian was killed. From 300 on, this is no longer true. Question mark, how could anybody become a Christian? Stay a Christian. Very good question. How can people become Christians if they are Christians? That is, if they aren't forced to divest themselves of their own time and their own space, their own body, their own political order, the fashions of the day, and the ambitions of their own mind. Christianity is based, as I said, on the death of these four. It's very serious. Now, in 312, the Christians were in the same terrible position as you are. That nobody cares whether you are Christian or not. If you say you are Christian, well, nobody thinks anything of it. He knows nothing is going to happen. If the man is a Christian, you can make the silver and block. That's all you can do. But otherwise, nobody expects from any Christian to do anything in this world which is important. So Christianity today is in the same position as the 312. It is absolutely nothing. Now there are four men here, and we try to break them down. St. Anthony, take them down. St. Augustine, Athanasius, and Jerome. And out of the achievement of these four people, you can see what it means to die in life. That's your problem, it's my problem. Old Goethe revived. He celebrated by centenary, but because Goethe is a man who died for 82 years, definitely, to all his goings on. That's why he said, I'm the first Christian again in this only, our own millennium. There is no Christian around here.
So it seems like if you die to your political vanity, you're...
Well, wait a minute.
Oh, excuse me.
This is just the phrase now. We'll see it. And we can't discuss it before you have seen these four men what they did, sir.
And you said that the last time that it's a continuum of that, it really happens every day.
It's every member, but we all do it, yes.
Every day, and the continual rebirth to it. It's not something that you die in these four things and then it's done.
Over and
over and over and over and over and over.
See?
Where you can see.
Then Anthony
became nearly 100 years old.
Athanasius,
when he died,
had the 46 years that died
on persecution.
St. Augustine was damned to live in Hanover for the last 40 years of his life.
No one knew people.
A perfectly demented and intellectual place. And Jerome lived as a hermit in Palestine, in a cave, in a bedroom. These four men, gentlemen, we are the first Christians who had to impress their brethren with this dilemma. Life is given to you. Nobody's out to kill you. But life may kill you if you don't fight it by death. the modern quality of real life, gentlemen, is the attacking of Christianity, the enemy of Christianity. And St. Anthony gives up his own body, all the more, monasticism. Athanasius defies the boundaries of the Roman Empire as constituting the destiny of men, the values of the empire. Jerome defies the language of his own day. He becomes a great translator. But the spirit has to be retranslated in every generation and in every generation and every day. Every word that we speak should be a fresh translation of the spirit. There you have your problem. So well, I have to go into it. I thought you wish to do so. In a sense, Augustine freed men from his own plan of history. St. Augustine, to go backward now, wrote when the Roman Empire was exposed to the invasion of the Goths who took Rome, raped and plundered, as the Russians have raped and plundered Berlin. And Vienna, similar story. So he wrote beyond the existence of the Roman history. Jerome wrote when there was great danger that the spirit would be identified with the existing languages, Greek and Hebrew, and he translated and freed and showed that any language is a sheath for the soul of the spirit, but not the soul itself. If you wish to understand this performance system, just think of the astonishing fact that the Roman Church reads Mass not in English, not in German, not in Polish, and not in the language of its founder, in Hebrew, Aramaic, or in Greek, as a first language. Why does the Church speak Latin in Mass? That's when many people attack it for this. Protestants say it's terrible. You shouldn't. So, what happened to these heretics, these Protestants? I'm a Protestant myself, but I also know that I'm a heretic in this church. Protestants are heretics. And it's high time for you to admit it. No Protestant is orthodox. Because he has fallen to the traps of his native language. The Luther and Calvin have really taught the deity that the Bible in their own language is sacrosanct. And so you get these poor texts who quibble over the text of in English of the Bible, which of course quite valuable because you can translate the same text into many languages. It means something quite different in modern language. So gentlemen, Jerome fixed the church so that it keeps a middle ground. Neither the original nor the final language is Latin, a language in between, a language devoid of all authority. Because you have the Greek New Testament and you have the Hebrew Old Testament and you have your own native tongue. And happily the priesthood of the Catholic Church sings it all in Latin to show that the language doesn't matter. There's no authority in Latin, except that it is not apt to be idolized. You cannot possibly say that Jesus spoke Latin, and you cannot possibly, you see, say my language is the best. Because it is your Latin. But in English, the English speaking word, that's disenchantment, that's inward, that's nationalism, that's challenge. The subject is unchristian. You see, we cannot die to their language, these people in the English department, and you can't. But if you speak Latin for your prayers, then you can, then you are outside your language. You because your language then is no longer sacrosanct. You can see that it is a book which must be weeded, which must be pruned, which must be treated like a root creature, you see. It mustn't be spoiled. Language, gentlemen, becomes more and so dear. Roman history becomes more and so centered. Because he wrote the city of God to prove that the city of Rome was not the city of God. Jerome translated the Bible into Latin to prove that God does not speak any one language, but everyone in its appointed hour. In other words, that if you have a Latin text, you can retranslate it into Greek, or you can forward translate it into your own text. That by the translation you have, the Latin is just in a piece. You see, it's anabiotic, it's an refrigerator. The written book, the Bible, is nothing if you don't bring it to life. This is the grandeur of the Latin tradition of the Western Church, and nobody seems to understand it. Very strange. Even the defenders don't understand the wisdom of the Latin, which is waiting to be translated, and which makes the difference between the Holy Spirit and language. Most Protestants, take this down, gentlemen, are pre-Jerome again, because they actually believe that God wrote the Bible in King James Version. In other words, King James Version is for you the temptation. Throw it away. Read the Bible in French, and it's better than read the King James Version. Try it! Why? 300 years of King James Version have imbued all your language in rituals and prayers and poetry and plays so much that you can no longer hear. It's impossible for you to read the King James Version as fresh book. So the Bible has just seized the sword. That if the sword gets done out of the Bible, say not done, it's the sword is
sword.
It's a
sword is a sword.
How shall, with what shall one sword? The Lord said. You cannot sword your soul or anybody else's mind with the King James Version. Don't ask your children to read the King James Version. That's sentimentality. Of course, all that is going to be imagined sentimental. That's what they are. The whole church in this country is nothing but sentimentality, an import article from Europe. There is nothing to do with salt, and nothing to do with conversion, and nothing to do with death. It's just a nice life on bed. That's what it is. That's why Christianity is the corrupt gentleman. It means for most people the opposite from what it meant to his founder. To most people today it means life, and to its founder it means death. And therefore, most people today blaspheme and they say they are Christians. The most any decent person today may say is, I hope to believe. Anyone who says, I am a Christian, you can discount him. There is nobody in this world today has the right to say, I am a Christian. And that's the reason, King James Version is the reason. Because most of our Christian, so-called Christian practices are before the 4th century. They are not tested by the test of St. Augustine, who says the future of the British Empire and the future of the British of the United States have nothing to do with the will of God and the destiny of man. Well, ask any Episcopalian or any congregation or any Baptist of this country, they can think so. If he really knows that the disappearance of English and the disappearance of the United States, you see, may be in the plans of God, then you can begin to talk. But before, he's just denied it. He certainly cannot know, doesn't know what Christianity means. Because whether you read Matthew or you read the revelation from the textbook to the last book of the New Testament, the whole story is based on man's power to get out of these titles and out of these countries and out of these times and out of these languages. Take Matthew, written in Hebrew, translated into Greek. beginning with the genealogy in which it said every 14 generations, God abolishes the whole order of things that breaks into the new inspiration. The so-called genealogical table of Matthew, of course, is no genealogical table whatsoever. The people are too lazy to read. It means, why did Christ come? Because it was another 14 generations, it was high time for a revolution. For new inspiration, because with the old covenant, God brings in a new spirit every 14th generation. Joseph and Jesus constitute the 14th generation, so don't be surprised if something tremendous happens. Now that's the philosophy of history, which breaks every cycle. The first word of the New Testament, therefore, is the proving that four eons have preceded. Secular, secular means, you see, cycle of cycles, you see. And that the third of four now turns to the four finally with the name who can survive all cycles, who stands out for unity and continuation forever, who makes sense out of this disparity, incongruity, and this fragmentation, fragments of time on earth. As the Revelation says, that all, that the whole Babylon, that Rome will fall, and that in the future the same cycles as in antiquity will fall, and that Christ will sort of bring them down all. The word New Testament is a very simple thing. It only says to the whole text one thing, that all the times are today, we are from now on tied together by a power and a spirit that can live, you see, beyond the grave of all our ways. Send a messenger to teach us now. Teach us how our faith can survive all our ways. That is purpose, my horizon. The horizon of God is survives all the horizons of man. You can see on could be succeeded of translated by the final horizon. We talked about it that before. Any eon has a horizon, you see, of my hopes. We reach the end of our eon through our hopes, through our expectations. Saint Augustine says, the festival virgins have been raped in Rome. All the Romans think the end of Rome means the end of the world. It doesn't. God's history goes beyond the history of Rome. That's the whole point of the city of God, of Saint Augustine. Now we come to Jerome. Jerome says that he survived all the means of our intellectual life. That's our language. We survive all the means. We can have other means of speech. See, this version is just one version. You see, that doesn't lead you to bring you to heaven. That you will read the King James Version. That's sentimental. Or at one time it wasn't. In 1611, I'm sure it was the right thing. It had a power. You see? But has it this power today? You can never be sure. You can never be sure. Jerome said, nobody who speaks a civilized language shall think that he is a poet, or that he is a priest, or that he is a prophet, or that he is a seer for that reason. Gentlemen, languages think for us, and they live with it. As long as you think that you have to think everything through the King James Version, you see, you may miss something of heaven. You may miss out on your real destiny. You have to be free of this loyalty. Remember what we said at the end of last time. You have, a Christian is a man who can survive any earthly loyalty. It's another word for that. Then we come back to Saint Athanasius. Athanasius said that the powers that be must not be likened to God's Son, Christ. The form of Athanasius for 46 years was whether Christ was God or whether he was God-like. This is for you, perhaps, harder in the sense. Most
they give up this notion of divinity, not knowing what they're doing.
I don't think it's very difficult to understand.
In order to understand your and my position to this problem, I first go back to 325. 325 is the first emperor of Rome to hear the question and allow the bishops of Christianity to come together and debate with the queen. This Caesar had been worshipped as a god. You must never forget this. And you must never forget that. Say, fine.
Or whether you fall under the Fulbright field and prove that you have no mouth and put your way the floor to see you so that we will send you. I mean, in any case, gentlemen, power explodes truth. Because you want this power. You all want the possibility. If you forgo power, you can. If you forgo power, you can. If you forgo power, you can. Now send that in the ages. You have two problems. Send it in the ages of the voice, epidemic, and then voice, errors.
And errors, say, you know, I have all these nice things, sending me. They are just two birds in the sea, and you say, he's the boy. Now, fuck, he's the boy. But to make us understand, we say, see God is for God, and Jesus is for God. And so we get human beings. Human beings are all out of the position of the 19th century. Who is the human being? Arius is the human being. He says, those human beings, because he said the qualities of God are unique, no man is God. Therefore, let us call Jesus God-like. Now, Athanasius put against this two truths. One, Jesus is true man and true God. What is the meaning in his own mind? He had a full digestive problem. He breathed, he had to sleep, he slept, he had fear, he had hopes. He learned. He was an immortal. Then he died. Very much so. Maybe sure of that. And he was in his mother's womb, and he's a completely a human being. Don't forget this. Otherwise, this whole discussion becomes nasty. I have heard people discussing this whole story in the way as though people in Christians said that Jesus was a God. No. He's perfect man and perfect God. As to what God has done to him, he is God. As to what he has done to himself, he is man. From his death backwards looking, it's God who is on the scene all the time. As from his first forward looking, it's man acting out his own human life all the time. That is, gentlemen, true man and true God means that Jesus' life can only be understood when faced both ways, from the birth to his death, and from the death, his death to his birth. If you do not make this cross, the crucial position of man or Christ cannot be understood. He is man in the direction from the birth to his death. He is God in the direction from the crucifixion to his birth, because then you can say that the God in him was born the man who could go to the cross. If you, however, go primarily on from his birth, you can explain how that he finally was crucified. This is very different. So, first of all, Jesus is true man and true God. Second, he is not God-like. Because if he is only God-like, he cannot use it to understand God. The whole instrument of God on this earth is Christ to show what himself is like. Therefore, if you say that Jesus is God-like, he is superb. He is not able to create any evil. He is certainly not able to take you and me out of this world at the large time as though we came out of it at this moment.
this rebirth of you and mine depends on the fact that he was born and created and begotten by the Father. Otherwise, how can you be restored? In all our other verses, Aaron says he cannot learn from Jesus anything imperative, anything, how do you say, commanding, anything. It is only if Jesus is the revelation of God to us that Christianity becomes necessary and indispensable. The whole problem of Christ, however, is his being indispensable. You abolish Christianity if you say it is indispensable. It's just a nice gadget in your motor, in your car. It isn't exactly the same. It's either the indispensable step of humanity into unity, or it's not. Anybody who says that Christ is not the revelation of God deprives you and me of the knowledge of how to proceed. We have no standard of procedure that is common. They've actually nothing. You are the church, and I am a Muslim, and I am a German, and we kept what was in the past, and we are just what we are. We have nothing in common. The problem, gentlemen, of Christ was to create a common standard for men of all tribes and all empires, and of Jews and Greeks. Now, if he did this, it's all right. If he didn't, he is dead. So, by saying that Jesus is God like us, you may seem to be very nice, that nice politeness, gentlemen, and niceness and kindness are the persons of the Creator God. All these destructive kind people, they are the most destructive elements in our society, because they distinct lubrication for God. You cannot drive a car on the road. That is not what you do with your car. But you have to have an explosion. Every one of this 26 UPS only lubrication that he can go. So he can take the motor on the road. Kindness is oil. It is yellow. And that's why it's so terrible that people do tell you that we should have the oil. Grateful, kind, is human, and so let's say nice, and in addition to this, false to them, etc. But why don't we have some battery and have some explosion? This is the greatest mistake of our civilization, gentlemen, and it is the same mistake that you do, Charles and Athanasius. The Christ of Athanasius is horrifying. He's terrible, striking. He is awful. He is a Byzantine Christ for whom you tremble. God is nothing pleasant. Because he is dead, is not. And death is awful. Nobody talks about that. Because he is something awful. Nothing pleasant. No lubrication. It's a tremendous explosion. The curtain of the temple was rent. The earth would shake. And so ever, whenever an act of faith is committed, the earth will shake to this day. Believe me, gentlemen, religion is not a place. It is death in life. That's awful. It is something nice for centuries. That is religion. That's a memory of religion. But they tend to smother religion, to suppress it, to buy it off by the salary you pay to a minister. What has the minister to do with your religion? Highest word, praise, and keep your virtue. That's all it is. No good. Any act of this, gentlemen, makes an act of this extraordinary opinion. So, gentlemen, not in the world of Brandenburg, but was overcome. Arius, the Unitarian today, or the philosopher you can call him today, said, beautiful, wonderful, man is a wooden of beautiful things. Edison, it is perfectly common. He is very good to be the vice chairman of the Boy Scouts. But the Boy Scouts are very nice people, but they just are not the salt of the earth, and they are not the explosive directing force for the creation of the world of man. There's something nice about the Boy Scouts. It's an educational method. But this line of nation, the spirit of war, is not educational. It's creative. It's on a higher order. Nobody has begotten 14 children to education, but to adulthood or fornication. I mean, there are sins in life, gentlemen, crimes, great deeds. But don't think that kindness in education, you get and you work, and you work. You can hang nice paper on the wall of your civilization by kindness. And for everything, do it. Even I try to be polite. It's very difficult. And sometimes I think I should be much less polite. Because you're all killed by that. Politeness is nothing that you drive to anybody. But it only gives a tickle to people of the skin. It's a weapon. So, gentlemen, the main point is for us in Israel not to flatter God. And the main point for Arius is to flatter people. And to say, oh, God, life is wonderful. He's just a real genius. Genius, godlike, wonderful. All abolishes his necessity. Because, gentlemen, when he says God, he admits necessity. Obviously, even you, if you are atheist, can you remember that the word God means it? All of this universe, command, authority, over you and me, direction. So, whatever you may do, and may think, and may walk, or in what direction you may walk, when you speak of God, you may say, I am a necessary, when you are atheist. Or you may say, I'm necessary when you believe in God. Because he says, as you see, the responsibility for my existence on this earth is not in my own hands and on my own way. I have to find out what I am meant, what I am purpose, what I am willing. The difference between suicide and life. A man who commits suicide says, I'm unnecessary. You will admit that the certain is the completely certain interpretation of suicide. You see? Suicide always says I'm unnecessary. Or it is better for me not to live. There are, however, let me correct this, I know of suicide which has been put for it. Suicide can be sacrificed. You can sacrifice your life for somebody else, even in the form of suicide. But I mean suicide from despair. I mean the suicide which says it is worth living. That's a different story. You are living with three natures different. Not every suicide is that way. Second question was asked then, when the virgins were raised. They were had taken vows of chastity in ancient medieval Rome, like nuns, and they committed suicide under their rape because they were undone. And then the question was asked, what about Christianity? How do you explain all this? But he said, the nun whose rape did not commit suicide. She may not be able to interpret it, but she knows that her destiny is larger than her wishes, and her desire, and her vows. And the man whose race is still God's soul and God's will, soul. And therefore, she is not allowed to commit suicide because she is not a purpose. song. Millions of people in Europe have to live through struggle. There isn't a woman in the Russian zone of Germany that hasn't been raped. And many have been raped 70 and 80 and 100 times. And they live. And nuns as well, mothers and children, and I know of an American soldier who worked in an American housewife in the presence of her husband and her children. And the thing has become known because this rascal was in power enough to post up with an alarm. And the same girl who wore a rifle letter in New York told me the story. Now this poor housewife, who surrendered to the pistol of this man, he just threatened that he would shoot her husband if he wouldn't do it well. Is she going to commit suicide? If her own purposes in life are concerned, she would have to. She is her own making. She has her own personality. But she isn't her own purpose. She isn't her own thing. She does live there. She can live a good life. On a more explosive such a decision than to live on them. And it takes a greater rebirth of your faith than most of you would be capable of in the case of your own sister. But these are the real processes, gentlemen, which in the 4th-5th century gave rise to these tremendous Christians like Athanasius, who was for 40 years hated by the emperor because he exalted the Son of Man over the Son of Zeus, of Jupiter, on the throne of Rome. God likeness would have equaled Caesar and Jesus. The divinity of Christ exalted Christ over the life of Jesus, over the life of Caesar. And if he didn't exalt it over the life of Jesus, nobody could resist Caesar. Then the government of Caesar would be omnipotent. That would be world government. The majority of the covenant of the nations has decided so-and-so, then you have to follow it. You have no right to do it. You couldn't go to any cost with any effect. So, gentlemen, the divinity of Christ has exalted the cross over the throne. You may put it in the simple way of Caesar. And all earthly dominations fall after Athanasius. Don't affect it anymore. There is no absolute emperor anymore because Christ is a bird. Now this is the current situation.